this is going to be the body image part. And you think that this would be body image and sexuality, if you want to expand that a little bit. And you'd think that we talk about that in the physical recovery, not the emotional part of the recovery. But I really think that that is a result of physical, but more so emotional recovery. And I also underlined self-care, because I think that's there. If we can't practice self-care, how can we have a positive body image or a healthy sexual ideal if we're not practicing self-care? So I think that those two things go hand in hand. I had a great, I've had a couple careers in the investment business. I was a lobbyist prior to that. And before that, I thought for 10 minutes or so I'd be an actor. The reason I thought I'd be an actor, people said, "Are you an actor?" I said, "No." And they said, "Well, you should be an actor." So it was in the day like, well, if they think I should do it, then I should probably go do it. Not thinking about whether I liked it or not, but... So I remember this acting teacher had a really great exercise. And it wasn't about acting. It was about getting in touch with yourself and getting in touch with your body and your image. And he had us look in a mirror and just stare. Go stare into your eyes in the mirror and just stay there for a minute and really look at yourself. Really look at your eyes. And we would all be doing it. Then we have a big alarm go off, and so we look at ourselves in the eyes and really truly look, because that's one thing I discovered as a compulsive overeater. I could look in the mirror and not see myself. I could look but not see, and then one day I'd wake up and go, "What the hell happened? How did I get heavy?" And in the eye was really, I remember being stunned. It was because I refused to look at myself really in the mirror. Unless I absolutely positively had to. So he had us just stare at ourselves, look ourselves in the eyes, and then he says, "I want you to say I love you." And that was a really hard thing to do. I laughed. Most of us laughed because we were nervous. And he goes, "No, you need to get serious." And he goes, "I want you to go home every day, and I want you to spend about 5 minutes in front of the mirror just looking at yourself in your eyes, and I want you to say, I love you." And I got to tell you, that was one of the hardest things in the world to do. And I still do that exercise from time to time. And the reason is, for me, it works on a couple of different levels. A lot of it is about self-acceptance. And one of the big problems coming into the program, society has an image of what we should look like. And almost everybody on earth does not think they conform to that image and feel bad about it, regardless of how they look, whether they seem to conform to that image or not. And, especially in OA, I had this crazy thing of, oh my God, I'm getting fat. I can't stop it. I had this idea. You're born a size, and you're just going to get bigger. And maybe sometimes you can slow down the growth of getting heavier, maybe reverse it a little, but the fact is you're just going to get heavier and heavier and heavier, and then you get big, and then you die. And that's what I saw in my family. So it was a very negative view of body image. And I think the thing was, when I came into OA is, I just wanted to lose the weight, but how did I ever feel comfortable in my own body? No. Never. Did I feel comfortable, expressing myself physically or sexually? No, not in the least. By going through the steps, getting emotional abstinence, so to speak, beginning to feel good about myself emotionally, finding out what my truth is, who am I? What is my truth? What is my truth in this situation? What is my authentic self? After that, I have a chance at having and developing a healthy body image and a healthy view of who I am. Because that's just one more expression of my authentic self. And, most of the time I'd be very negative. For a lot of times, at my sponsor's direction at the time, I wouldn't comment. You know, I wouldn't say, okay, I go away, I look fat, I look this, I feel good about how I look, I don't, etc. I just was no comment. He said, just, it's none of your business. And to a certain point, I think because whatever I would say would be negative, that was a correct response. You know, a lot of things that I found out, you know, that have helped me in the program, it's a little bit of Al-Anon in this, and it's like, my life is none of my own business. My life is, I live it, and I don't have to comment on it. And sometimes, you know, it's hard to say that about my body. My body is not my business. Because at a certain point, if I have recovery, if I have abstinence, I have to take ownership. You know, and sometimes I have to say, okay, this is not where I want to be, but you know what? It's not bad. It's okay. And I can be comfortable with it. I become comfortable with who I am today. And, you know, part of that is going back and I look in the mirror and look at my image and without laughing or being nervous, say, I love you. And really feel it and then really see myself. And I think that that is, you know, it's always very explosive to talk about this stuff in a way. Because, so, you know, it, you know, eating, it's about our bodies. And it's about our image. And then you get into the body image and then sexuality, and that's a whole other can of worms. And everyone's very, very uncomfortable about that. It was funny. I used to work when I was in college, on a crisis hotline. I thought for a while I wanted to be a psychologist or psychiatrist. So I figured, well, you had this crisis hotline. You could go learn and take a course and then work on the hotline. I figured that's a great way to figure out if I wanted to be a therapist or not. And it was. It was fascinating. What I liked even more is they asked me to come back and be a trainer to train the trainers to work on the hotline. And the thing about working on a hotline is you get all sorts of crazy calls. People want to kill themselves. People need help. People who are in very desperate situations. Maybe someone had been physically abused or raped and you need to get them to a hospital and to the authorities and into a safe place. And it can be very traumatic at times. And, you know, one of the things that you had to be able to do is talk to people about no matter what was going on, but to make them feel comfortable. And so you had to be comfortable talking about everything. So I used to, you know, say one of the exercises, okay, why don't you turn to the person next to you and let's talk about sex. And everyone's in college. Everyone, you know, in the 1980s, people were pretty open about things. But boy, no one could talk about it, and we'd be silent. I'm like, come on, let's go. Let's have a conversation about sex. And no one wanted to do it because we were all uncomfortable talking about it as a society. I can tell you, in French program, it's a lot easier to talk about. Don't know why. They have a completely different view of things. It's fascinating what they talk about versus what we talk about. But what it comes back to is body image. You know, am I comfortable with where I am today? Can I love myself today, even though I may not be, quote-unquote, perfect, I may not be that ideal? Can I love myself? And I think that that is really about the emotional aspect of the program. And part of that also feeds into self-care. If I'm able to care for myself, if I'm able to carve out and say, you know what, on Thursday evenings and on Saturday mornings, this is when I go to my meetings, and it's sacrosanct. I need that time for myself no matter what. That's part of my self-care. You know, I need to make sure that I have this stuff at home because it's part of my food plan, and I don't want to wake up in the morning and then have to get in the car and look around because none of this food is here. You know, am I preparing and taking care of myself and working on self-care? Am I making sure that I'm in relationships that are healthy and positive and I'm not constantly at war or in combat? You know, am I taking care of myself in that fashion? You know, am I putting myself in safe situations? Or am I putting myself in unsafe situations to be a people pleaser? You know, that all comes back to self-care. And then ultimately, if I'm practicing self-care, then I have a chance at having a healthy body image. If I'm not practicing self-care, if I'm not taking care of myself, if I'm not putting my program first, forget it. I'm not going to have a healthy body image. Or a comfortable sexual identity. And so that's why I think that's more of a physical and emotional recovery an emotional recovery than a physical recovery. Because I've lost the weight and I've gotten down. I figured, well, at 160 pounds, then it's going to be fine, and it wasn't. And then at 150 pounds, it's going to be fine here. And at 145 pounds, it still wasn't okay. So it's not a physical aspect of it. It's not about physical recovery. It's more about emotional recovery. And, you know, by working the steps, also, one thing that step 9 does, it's a great antidote for shame. Once I amend those relationships, I can let go of a lot of shame. The shame of my behavior, which in some cases could be pretty awful, and or, you know, the acceptance of abusive behavior at the hands of somebody else, and amend that relationship. Not, I could forgive them, but also amend that. And once I can deal with the shame that I've been carrying around and the relationships I've had, then that's going to help me move forward and have more positive relationships, more positive experiences, and a more positive body image. But I have to do all of that work. That takes a long time. And I think a lot of people get very frustrated that it doesn't happen quick enough and the self-acceptance doesn't happen. But, you know, there's a lot of cleaning out that has to take place before we get to that point. And by living, and the other thing is also, I need to change the negative tapes in my head. You know, I am very good. What I think, it's like practicing piano. If I practice the piano a lot, I'm going to become a pretty good piano player. If I'm practicing negative thoughts about myself, guess what? I'm going to be really good at thinking negative thoughts that I'm a piece of junk, that I'm no good. And if I'm starting to think positive thoughts about myself, then slowly I'll begin to think positively. Like, hey, you know, you're pretty good at playing the piano. You're pretty good at handling certain types of situations. You know, you look pretty good when you dress up nicely. You look pretty good that way. You know, maybe do more of that. And if I tell myself these things and I think begin thinking positive things, then I'm going to project a positive image. If I think I'm a piece of junk, no matter what kind of facade I put on, it's going to bleed out somehow. So it really has to be about working on the inside and becoming an authentic self to then have a good body image. I don't think we can have that. And there's plenty of people, you know, there are plenty of people that we know that appear to be of you know, great, normal body image, great shape, etc., but they hate themselves. Utter loathing. And so we need to get to that work. And I think sort of one of the things, the self-acceptance is definitely tied into, if I don't have the self-acceptance, I'm not going to get the healthy body image. I'm not going to have the healthy sexual identity and relationships and feel good enough about myself to say, you know what? This is not a situation I want to be in. This is not a relationship that is healthy and positive for me. Regardless of what they think of me, this is not good. And so I've had to relearn that a number of times throughout my life and throughout my recovery. And, you know, it is... it's a constant learning process. And being in the program young and being in the program middle-aged, I will say it's not any easier. It's not any easier. What is easier is that working the steps and getting to a healthy body image through accepting who I am and being my authentic self and finding out what my truth is. Then I can say, okay, this is what I am. You know? I know that, you know, am I 100% comfortable with where my weight is today? No. Am I close? Yeah. But I'm not. You know, is that okay? Yeah. You know, it's funny. I work at a gym in West Hollywood. My trainer, you know, he's like, buff. That's all he does is work out. And so, and the gym in West Hollywood is probably 80% gay, I'll say, somewhere in there. And it's funny because my trainer will say, you know, if you just lost that 12 pounds, 15 pounds, you'd be in perfect shape. I was like, yeah, okay. It'll happen. He goes, yeah, but this is the diet that you need. I go, no diet. He's like, okay. And he goes, and the guy, you know, a lot of guys at the gym, oh man, you look great, but you'd be perfect if you lost 10 to 15 pounds. Just get rid of that middle, a little bit more, it'd be amazing. You understand that, don't you? I go, yeah. I said, but I'm straight. I could care less what you think. You know, I could care less. It's nice that, you know, in 10 or 15 pounds, you'll be really interested in me, but I don't care. And they're just like, and I'm just like, that's not my audience. You know, and if there was a woman saying it, I might be, okay, I might hear it a little bit more, but at the same time, it's like, well, this is what it is. You know? It's not bad. And I can say that with truth. It ain't bad. It may not be perfect, but it ain't bad. I know that. I'm comfortable with that. And that's a lot of growth. To be comfortable with it maybe not being perfect, but saying, this is not bad. This is good. I can look in the mirror and say, yeah, you look good. And it is truthful. And it really comes back to self-acceptance. If I haven't done the work, I really can't say that with any type of truth. And I find that the more self-acceptance I have, again, it's not putting myself in dangerous situations. And I talk to sponsees, and I constantly hear about the dangerous situations that they may put themselves in relationships, people-pleasing, sponsee who, you know, he's had a fair amount of weight gain because, man, he doesn't go to meetings and not really willing to work a food plan. And his girlfriend, you know, they got tired of him being fat, you know, and broke up with him. And I was like, okay, well, let's take a look at this relationship. Is this really a safe relationship? It's not a safe relationship emotionally. And we've talked about how this is not a good place for you to be, regardless of what she thinks about you. This was a very volatile relationship. And so I'm not surprised at the outcome. So maybe we need to get back and focus on your recovery. And, you know, you're, of course, focusing on the physical and the rejection. But the reality of the situation is this was not a healthy relationship. You didn't get into it for healthy reasons. It wasn't healthy any time during it. So maybe we need to get back and think about this a little bit. So, you know, hopefully by the time we've gotten to step 9, and after, you know, when we get to step 9, you talk about the promises. And if you read the promises, that is the definition of a spiritual awakening. That's it. If you want to know what the promises are, they're a spiritual awakening. If you've had those promises fulfilled in your life, you have had your spiritual awakening. It's very, very clear. And I think at that point, too, is where we can come to a degree of self-acceptance. And there's everything in society today that tells us not to be, you know, there's a reason to, you know, I'm not living the Instagram life. You know, everything on Instagram or social media, it looks perfect. And it's all contrived. And so I have to remember that and remember what is my reality. And, you know, do I choose the people in my life because of how they think I look or what I represent or because they want to be with me? And a lot of times I'd put up with anything just to have people around me because I didn't want to be alone. And that's, I wouldn't necessarily put myself in an unsafe situation, but I wouldn't be putting myself in the best situation possible because I'd rather trade, you know, not being alone for anything and putting up with not great behavior. And that, of course, kicks my self-esteem down into the basement. And it starts that, you know, binging and everything else. So it all is, it's all connected. It's all connected. I'm not sure I have a whole lot more to say. Does anyone have any questions or should we open it up for some sharing? Because everyone loves to share about body image, etc. Yeah. Exactly. That's like the last thing I want to talk about. Because it gets to the core of who we are. You know, and being a compulsive overeater, You know, here's the other thing, the image of a compulsive overeater. If I'm a heroin addict and I'm rolling around in the gutter, that's very romantic by, you know, today's Hollywood standards. I mean, look, it's terrible what's happening to him. But at the same time, it's a very romanticized view of things. If I am that same person rolling around in the gutter after eating half of a birthday cake, I am viewed with disgust.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's the starting point. I'm much more acceptable as a heroin addict with a fucked up life than I am as a compulsive overeater who has no control over their lives. It's disgusting. So that's the starting points that we have in society of an image of who we are. And of course, then let's look to the body image, and there we can just get attacked any which way to Sunday on that one. So it's so central to who we are. And, you know, it's how do we live a successful life and feel good about our body if we're not at goal weight or we're not where we think we should be. And I think that comes back to having a self, you know, going back to step six, concept of humility, you know, where we ask our higher power to remove these character defects. What we're really doing is we're asking for humility and we're working towards an ideal that our higher power has for us. What's the potential for me that my higher power has? I can guarantee you it's probably a much higher potential than what I have for me set out. I'm willing to take a lot less than what my higher power has in store for me. I like to use your softer way. I'll take that. That's fine. You know. But if we go back to that idea of working towards God's ideal of who we are to be and applying that to body image, you know, it's a work in progress. And, you know, today I feel pretty good about where I am. And you go, oh, yeah, you're good looking, you're this, you're young, you know, I'm 53. I'm young for 53. The reason I'm young is not genes. I have horrible genes. If you met my family, you'd understand. But I haven't smoked, drank, or for the most part, eaten sugar in 35 years. You know, that's the shit, or being the sun, those are the shit things that age you more than anything. And if I haven't been indulging in that or participating, but 6 years with sugar out of 35, okay, that's what's kept me young. It's the program. It's working the steps. It's not genetics. No way. It's the program, and that's it. And so, you know, the other thing with whatever body image or whatever shape I am today is because I took the management of my life out of the hands of an idiot, me. And I put it into the hands of a higher power. I put it in the hands of a trainer who absolutely does not understand compulsive overeating, but it's not his job. His job is to, you know, work me out in a manner that is consistent with getting in good shape, strength training and all that, and I let him decide what I'm supposed to work out on that day. And I have a food plan that I've worked out with a sponsor, and I really try and give it up to God as much as possible and to my sponsor. So I'm not in control of my life. So basically, I am a product of the program. So can I really hate myself that much if I have that approach to my body? Yeah, that would then, if I did, then I'd have to be really pissed off at you. And then I'd have to blame you, which that makes no sense whatsoever. So I have to bring it back to recovery. And, you know, they always have the body and sexuality meetings way off to the side, you know, at all the conventions, because it is an explosive thing, and I hate talking about it. I don't feel comfortable talking. I don't think anybody really loves talking about it. But at the end of the day, it's a lot more central. And if we don't integrate it as part of our overall program and look at it as a result, our body image and self-acceptance and sexual identity, as a result of all the work and recovery that we've done, then I think we're selling ourselves really short. Because that is a culmination of all the work that we've done in the program. And it doesn't mean we're always going to be entirely comfortable with it. And it doesn't mean we're always going to be in relationships where have fulfilled really what should be fulfilled or have the correct type of relationships. That's all part of the process that we go through in the program. But I think we get to a point of acceptance and comfort. And most of the people I know with long-term abstinence have gotten to that point. And at the end of the day, sexuality is not our body. It's up here. Someone who is self-confident and comfortable with themselves is much more attractive than someone self-doubting, neurotic, regardless of the body image. And so, and they say all sex takes place in between the years, and it does. So if I've done the work on me inside and emotionally, then I am just, ergo, a much more attractive person to myself and to anybody else. Because at the end of the day, I think that's really where it's at. You know, can I be an attractive person? Now, we don't want to get, not in a people-pleasing kind of way. Because I'm the first person, how am I going to get this person to like me? That's not what I'm talking about. It's, how do I feel comfortable with me? And I think that is, so that is all I have to say on the subject. And